embracing the fallen, encouraging the wounded. Reinforcements, the goddess says lightly, for a battle that Abarsus warns is coming. Nico knows all too well that it is never good when Abarsus comes to Earth outside a pyre of flame. Tempest finally answers the goddess. There is no other like Abarsus in all of Earth and Heaven. Do we need reinforcements? And if we do, will you provide them? Harmony looks from Tempest to Nico with those sky-wide eyes and says, You have enough with those committed to fight by your side. If you and yours are steadfast, this battle coming will go your way. This battle coming. Abarsus and the Theban goddess have both said it now. Nico slides off his mount, thinking to give the goddess a hand down from the mare, take Harmony away and talk to her by himself. He has so many questions to ask. But the goddess is gone when he looks again. With nothing to show, she's ever been there. Not even a gust or a breeze left behind. And Nico's sable mare is gone with her. End of chapter 41. Chapter 42. Echo of War. Fated fire rages. Ascalon has called down such a firestorm upon the stepson's barracks that it blows back upon him and his mage guild. An infernal imbalance puts itself right. Action and reaction, law of nature. A risk he took, circumventing caution and the gods to inflict witchfire revenge, has left him helpless to extinguish the blaze. A loss he'll take. He's too late to block the path of fire leading to his earthly door. Now, says the wizard boy, sobbing in the burning manse, now we will kill them all. Promise! He coughs. He stares around with tearing eyes among the cinders, smoke, and blaze. He darts from one window to the next, smudgy with soot, looking more like a youth and less like a wraith, covered with ashes, dodging the flames. Now, agrees the Dream Lord, waxing wroth as his mage guild flares around his ears. Now. All about them, naphtha fireballs are exploding, flaming arrows whizzing by, draperies catching fire, galleries collapsing. He takes the wizard boy by the hand and bids farewell to this place that has served him so long. And with that promise, made in a single word, Ascalon bids farewell to reason. Farewell to hopes of lesser conflicts brewing or to lesser retribution ahead. With strength eroding, with ancient poison in his blood, with Shamshi's hand in his, he waves the mage guild away. Not another word to say, not another thought to think. After all is said and done, it comes to this. Brute force. Brutal last resorts. Brutality in all its guises at last will have its say. All because of Tempest and his clan of stepsons, his sacred band? Not so. In truth, because of Nicodemus. For a score of years, men and gods and mages and demons have struggled over this one pure soul. This one hero in the making, Nicodemus, has caught up so many powers and undone them all with his balance and his steady gaze. Perhaps not even Nico can be blamed, Ascalon ponders with his last shred of humanity, as he whisks Shamshi away to Meridian, his stronghold, his sphere. Perhaps the fault is with Ascalon himself, and not with enemies he's made or souls he's coveted to take and train and mold. He has been a force unsurpassed for untold centuries. Once a mage, he had risen to rival gods themselves. Demiurge and arrogant. Not the originator of evil, but close enough in some philosophies. Regent of the Seventh Sphere, entelechy of dream and shadow, ruler of Meridian, the antithesis of Bandara, the dark that balances Bandara's light. If he had been content with what he had, then all he'd had would still be his. But greed and hubris crept into him, and pride that was unbending. What doesn't bend must break when dooms are apportioned and destiny takes the lead. As it will now, and as it must, until this struggle ends. A great funnel arched over the sunny eastern sky, pink and gold and crawling with lightning. The Thebans went running, covering their heads with their arms, but Tempus explained to Charon,
"It's only Geon, coming with the horses from Free Nisibis."
And so it was. The cloud conveyance, borrowed from Stormbringer, father of all weather gods, rose and stretched and sank to ground north of the barracks. All around the funnel cloud, wind whipped. On the barracks' battlements, men crowded to see, despite the gale. Tempest rode out with Nico and five others to take the horses' shanks from the Nisi Bisi fighters who brought them, and hug their brothers, allies from the wizard wars they'd fought together, and to say farewell again.
"You sure you don't need us? We'll stay and fight with you against any threat until the end. Can we help?"
Bashir asked Tempus, his flat, dark face and gray eyes worried.
"Geon said your barracks were set afire."
"Just leave the horses, my brother. You've been as good a friend as a man could ask. This is not your fight. Life to you, and yours, and everlasting glory to all your successors and Free Nisibis. May it remain forever free."
"Riddler, be you careful,"
Bashir warned low, seeing something in his face or his demeanor.
"And remember, you always have a home with us, you and all of yours."
The two embraced and clapped one another on the back one more time. As dearly as Tempest needed reinforcements, he couldn't ask Bashir's successors. Not this time. They were too few as it was, guarding their mountain passes against all intruders. Jihan held open the cloud conveyance, one hand outstretched, copper hair blowing in the maelstrom. Without another backward look, Bashir led his successors into the funnel. Geon stepped in beside them to see them back whence they came. The conveyance swallowed them whole, closing its mouth of pink-tinged clouds, and whirled away. So now they had spare horses. Nico looked over at him with sparkling eyes.
I miss that man. He'd have stayed. Freena Sibis was good to the band.
No need to involve him and his. Not in this. This is our fight. If things went badly, having Bashir's fighters along would mean spreading the war to Wizard Wall.
What starts here ends here, Nico.
He could see Stealth's wistfulness. Outside the band, Bashir was Nico's closest friend.
Let's get these horses fitted up.
But Crit and Sink were already seeing to the horses. This staff he had now was the finest he'd ever assembled. They knew his heart, knew his mind, and anticipated his every need. Overhead, the cloud conveyance arched back the way it had come, then disappeared. When they'd apportioned the new stock amid the commotion of reconstruction, stalls being built and roofs being raised, the day was nearly done.
There's still some daylight, Commander. You should try the new black stud,
Nico said to him.
Later, Tempest told him, as they threaded their way through the courtyard full of wagons, carting debris out and lumber in, and chariots and supplies to replace all they had lost. A wolf call from the battlements sounded. Someone was coming, fast.
It was too soon for Randall to be back. They stopped where they were. The gates opened. Corus and his roan galloped through and straight up to them.
"You're a day late," Stealth called out. "You'd better have a good explanation."
The stepson nearly tumbled off his horse.
"Commander, Stealth," he said, breathlessly, staggering once. "I'm sorry. I was detained."
By then the blood on Corus's cuirass and chitin and the puncture wound over his breastbone were easy to see. Nico moved to support him, but the young fighter stepped back. Corus raised both hands.
"I'm well enough. Vashanka is healing me. Look."
Corus pushed and pulled at his cuirass, wriggling, showing them the puncture near his groin. He postured brazenly.
"The Storm God loves me."
"Out of the courtyard, Corus," Tempest said. "Not here with so many watching. If the God is looking after you, how will the others feel? Come to my quarters. What happened?" With Nico on one side of him and Tempest on the other, Corus said brashly,
"I was coming back from the palace the long way, hoping to find Sham, and took 3 crossbow bolts."
He indicated the other puncture behind his shoulder.
"I lost some blood. Shawmy tended me. It was wonderful."
Nico eyed Tempest over Chorus's head. "Wonderful. Don't depend on the god to do your fighting for you. Stick to your orders. Don't improvise. Be more careful."
"You should have sent word to Crit," Nico said harshly. "We were concerned." "It won't happen again."
Corus looked away to Tempest.
"But, Commander, was it like this for you?"
"Like this, when the curse fell on me and I bargained with the Storm God for my life."
"Like this,
century after century, debacle after debacle, up to my hips in blood and carnage. Unable to give love or receive it or even stop men intent on dying from throwing their lives away."
"Life is different for each of us," Tempest said. "Nico is right. Gods are not dependable. Things that you can see and touch and feel, these do I prefer."
"Gods are fickle, vengeful, and mean.
using us to their own ends. Beware, young fighter, the euphoria of a man who thinks he's immortal. A fool is always first to die.
And Nico said, I want to look at those wounds, before we decide Vashanka is omnipotent. In my experience, no god is. Anything else to tell us?
They were near the door to Tempest's office. Tempest held up a hand to silence both until they got inside.
Then, strip, Nico said, adamant.
Chorus looked at Tempest.
Must I?
You must, as you must always do what Stealth orders. Now, what else?
Well, I went to Torchholder, told him what you said, and then early this morning the Mage Guild was destroyed by fire. Burned to the ground, I heard. But I didn't go there. You told me not to go. I came back as soon as I could ride. Ow!
Nico probed in the wound on Chorus's shoulder, and then spun the boy around.
Let's see the rest.
Assiduously, Nico prodded at Chorus. Stealth would save every one of his fighters, if he could, from everything.
We'll dress these wounds again. Reopen the one in your gut. You'd better hope that God truly loves you. It's going to hurt.
Nico rummaged in his trunk, still in Tempest's room, and came up with the clean loin guard and chitin.
I'll get Crit to send Gale and Cassandra to cut you. Stay here with the Riddler until then.
It doesn't hurt now. Vashanka is healing me, I told you.
Nico ignored Chorus.
Commander, a moment, please. Outside?
Out in the wind, leaning on the closed door, Nico said,
Not good. Too much heat in those wounds. Too much blood lost.
As he spoke, he stared around the courtyard. A muscle jumped in his jaw.
This one is the palace favorite. Maybe we should send him there. I don't think he's fit to fight, or will be any time soon.
Nico, what is it?
Chorus's wounds weren't really troubling Nico. Chorus would mend soon enough. Something else was wrong, something deeper.
Can't you feel it, Commander? I felt it before he told me. The Mage Guild's destroyed, and something's coming, fast. My mutt... Never mind. I want to send out scouts. Half a dozen. Rotate them through the four evening watches. I'll take the first watch myself.
Nico, have you been sleeping?
I wish I hadn't. When I sleep, I'm back in Chironea, where there's fire everywhere. I wish I was like you, Riddler.
No, you don't. You're like yourself. Just be patient.
What about the scouts, patrolling outside the walls?
Have Crit detail them, but you're not going. You and I have too much planning to do.
So they didn't ride outside the walls during the first watch or the second, but by third watch, Nico couldn't be put off. They were saddling their horses to reconnoiter beyond the walls when the call came.
Crit ran up, breathing fast.
I've got a scout who just came in saying there's something out there we should see.
Crit seldom ran anywhere.
Where out there?
Tempest said.
Below the overlook, out where the...
Where a Abarsis went to heaven, Nico said knowingly, checking the big black cinch.
It was in my dreams last night.
Torches flared in the camps beneath the overlook, tents stretching out on the feral fields of the valley below. In the waning moonlight you couldn't judge their number. But Critias knows there are too many. Many, many. Camps like this don't just appear in a valley with more men encamped a hill away. It doesn't happen. Men moving, horses and chariots and infantry. It takes preparation, logistics. Men in a multitude create noise and disturbance. It can't be done in just one day. But this army hadn't been out here yesterday or the day before. Deep blue night all around. Tempest and Nico on Crit's left. Eye whites and teeth flashing. Horses and men close together. Back just far enough from the edge not to be silhouetted against the vault of heaven. His commander's helmet catches a spill of moonlight, and a superstitious chill runs over Crit from head to toe.
Been here before, done this before.
But he hadn't, not quite. Nothing stirs but the three of them and their horses on the overlook and too many torches wavering in the camps below.
Commander, what do you think?
Crit asks after they've been here too long, stared for too long into the eye-teasing dark, in a silence broken only by their horses waffling and stamping in the summer night.
I think we all know what we see, Tempest says softly, voice cutting through the dark like a snake hissing, poised to strike.
Nico says nothing. Stealth is watching the farther hilltop for a glint of movement or a darker shadow of men or horses obscuring firelight in the valley below. Tempest, astride his trose, too luminous tonight, is still as a statue, one hand on his hip, his reins dangling, looking for something to show him the identity of this army down in the valley. But only sunrise can confirm what everyone here tonight knows.
Never mind it. This is their adversary, bringing the war to them. Did Tempest know it, expect it, entice it, lust for it?
Nico's black horse shies at something, skittish and surprised, sidling rightward, crowding Crit's big chestnut. Crit feels vulnerable with so many enemies stretched out before him in this valley and the next.
I know what I think, Nico mutters. But how can it be?
Eye whites again. Nico is searching for something in his partner's face, out here in the dark.
Kyrenia.
Kyrenia, Crit repeats.
But it can't be. But this is what it looked like, what it felt like on the night before that battle.
Crit doesn't have enough fighters, not with all his people, to meet this enemy. Not with all his own sacred band and 10 other bands besides, if he could find them. Crit's mouth dries up. Of the 70 fighters left to him, 12 were burned badly. He'd come to Sanctuary with 65. Lost a Theban pair and a pair of stepsons, hired 12, and lost 4 more. So the Sacred Band totaled, including himself, Stealth, and the Riddler, 70 men. 58 fit fighters to face hundreds.
Thousands, maybe more.
Plus Gion. Plus Randall, who was off in Lemuria seeking reinforcements.
Reinforcements for what? And how many?
Crit had asked when the Riddler ordered Randall to go. Tempest had told Crit, Randall will bring back 290 on temporary duty, under sink. So Crit had learned then that Tempest was bringing in nearly the entire 3rd Commando to support them. Far more manpower than the Riddler had ever brought to Sanctuary.
The commander had known what was brewing here. Maybe the god had told him. How long had Tempest known? And the gods? And Lil, Bashanka, the Theban's harmony? What difference what the gods knew or when? Better if Crit had known sooner. Will heaven even up the odds? Because the storm god of the armies is surely wherever Tempest is. And perhaps Vashanka is where Chorus is. As for the Theban goddess, none knew what she had in her mind. Some god or goddess or power had let the barn fire happen, perhaps made it happen. Never mind that other powers from on high may have helped to quench it. When the gods are at odds, men die.
Or are we on our own this time? Is this incursion simply the result of snatching the fated dead from Chironea? Or of adventures begun by his commander in stealth so strange these days and fey, locked in some battle with an adversary you couldn't see to fight? And the sky above is too full of stars. Let's get off these horses. Crawl over to the edge. Present a less tempting target.
Crit is not immortalized, not favored by any god or any other power, or the mortal enemy of any, he hopes, beyond what honest war demands.
Get a closer look.
He wants to say it, but he can't. Now the Riddler has caught up all their souls again, and put them down in hell again. This time to face a battle that might be one they can't win. Crit hadn't realized that hell could be so big. No matter how good you are, this many fighters will wear you down, tire you out, overrun you.
How many? Too many. 20 to 1, for certain. Maybe more. Chironea, he sighs, shaking his head as if he could shake away the sight, too evocative, twisting his gut with memory. Just like before.
Chironea, Crit, agrees the Riddler, gravel in his softest voice, reserved for horses and the dying. But not like before. Clop, clop, clip, clop. Then Nico unwinds from his horse and crouches down at the overlook's edge, reins in his hand, and speaks so low Crit can't catch the words, with the wind picking up and their horses chewing on their bits. Crit needs to shake the feeling that he's been here before, lived this before, and is fated to live it again. His hair is standing up all over his body. His mouth is so dry it stings as if he's been eating thistles. Neither the commander nor Stealth says another word for what seems like forever. The silence is eerie, broken only by insects chirping, leather squeaking, tails lashing. Above, the sky starts to lose its gauzy road of twinkling stars. Clouds boil up from a storm building somewhere.
How are we going to fight through this? Are we now the fated dead?
On the battle plain at Chironea had been 300 of the sacred band of Thebes, and better than 30,000 others, some said, on either side, Thebans and Macedonians and allies. How many were out there tonight? And was this their enemy, or was Crit jumping to conclusions? Could this be some other army, happening by, bivouacked for a night,
on their way somewhere?
But he would have known about it. Tempest would. They'd asked for this, snatching those Thebans from that foretold battle plane. So here it comes, some echo of war unfinished, perhaps to take those Thebans back again.
How can this be? Crit asks the Riddler.
It's not what it seems, Tempest says, sighing. Not the same Chironea. Not the same enemy. More like the visions we've all had. You can't fight the same battle twice. Eternity won't allow it. It's Ash's doing, he and Shamshi. They want us to think we're doomed. This is what we'll fight and where we'll fight, for certain. We wanted this, we courted it. Now it's here. Whatever else it is, it's something far out of balance. Nico stretches out flat on the overlook and says, It's surely something, and a lot of it. I've been dreaming this for so long.
Did you dream how we fight it? Crit asked Stealth.
Straight on, replies Tempest, second in command, a murmur in the night. And the Riddler says, It will look different in the morning. We'll break their pattern, set the battle tempo, make them bring their war to us. Nico gets to his feet and swings up on his horse.
It's winnable. We can do this. We just need to make a plan, decide what's critical and what's not.
How do you mean?
Crit asks. No one is better at detail than Crit, but he is more tactical than strategic. And this may be an enemy beyond his ken, and beyond the skill of any fighter of unmagical means and mind.
We know what happened at Chironea the first time, Nico says. This is different. This is the Dream Lord's army.
Nico adds in that offhanded voice with which he always announces the deepest peril.
Isn't it, Commander?
These are all Ash's dreamers and his dreaming dead, Tempest agrees. Souls not saved by any god. Those who live in their sleep and those who died in their sleep. Restless ghosts and men collected for ages, from everywhere. Meridian's dreaming dead or living dreamers, it makes no difference. All of them can die, or die again. If they die at our hands, they'll find a better rest. Ascalon and Shamshi think to overwhelm us with sheer numbers, the Riddler adds. That's not going to happen. We need to find the Dream Lord and Shamshi. Kill those two, and this battle's won. All these troops are meant to frighten and demoralize us.
You're succeeding in scaring me, Crit muttered.
No, they're not, Nico said wearily. The Riddler's right. This will look different in the morning. We'll go back, send out scouts to watch here, and tell us if these start to move. If you agree, Commander.
Turning his back on enemies in such numbers, so many, many, was something that went against Crit's grain. He prized intelligence most of all.
You two go back. I'll stay a while, till the scouts come. I'll want to give precise instructions. Then I'll find you, if you agree, and hear what you want to do.
So they left him there, to lie on his belly and brood and wonder how he was going to get his band through this, and safely home to Lemuria. He wished Strat was here. At a time like this, a man wants his partner close at hand.
All he could think
was that they'd gotten through it the last time, on the Chironian battle plane, with just as many enemies there, or more. He'd brought all of his home, alive if not unscathed, and saved 23 pairs of Thebans besides. So it was possible to survive, maybe even to win. The commander and Nico were right. Possible, but not likely. And they'd nearly lost Tempus the last time. Long spears thunking into flesh. Man staggering backward, impaled, groaning.
Stratton brought his shard to the barracks straight away. Though the hour was getting late, the moon was setting. Everything should have been sleepy at the barracks, but it wasn't. Torches were blazing everywhere, men running to and fro, hitching wagons, moving equipment. The ghost horse, carrying Strat, his shard up behind, smelled the smoke. It whinnied and grunted and wouldn't behave. Sink came to take the ghost horse to its new stall, saying under his breath,
"Still looking for glory in a witch's eyes, Strat?"
Strat gave Sink a promissory stare and said only, "We're here at the commander's order." Crit would have been proud of him for holding his tongue. He helped his shard down, and then dismounted. They found the commander in his quarters. Nico was by his side when Tempus opened up the door. When these two met late, something was always afoot. And Chorus was here, pale and wan, but bright-eyed, wearing a tunic far too big, with lumpy bandages underneath it. Nico whispered to Chorus, but the boy didn't leave.
"Ishard," Tempest said, "please join us."
"There isn't enough seating. Chorus is still sitting on the bed." Nico whispers in his ear again. Chorus gets up and leaves at last, eyes averted from Ishard as he goes, closing the door behind him. Nico gets the room's two chairs for Ishard and Stratton and sits on the bed. Stealth seems almost serene tonight as he lays his new sword across his lap and begins roughening the leather of its hilt with a rasp. Ishard sits in the rickety chair as if it were a throne, her cloak pulled around her, cowl down about her tiny shoulders, and her white face delicate.
"So, Riddler, you sent for me?"
"We have a number of questions and an offer you may find irresistible. If you can help us, we're sure we can make it worth your while."
Stratton wished he could have advised the commander not to bargain with her. Ishard would act or not based on criteria other than what the sacred band could offer her. Riding together so far, so fast, had made him certain of it. What they felt for one another could be invaluable on this night. But Tempest wasn't asking Strat, and his slitted eyes held damnation. The commander said, "What would it require to foray into Meridian, with, say, 350 fighters and their horses? And if it can be done, what price would you ask for helping us do it?"
"Ha! Now I know you're mad," said Ishard. "In the city, they say you're all possessed by some foreign goddess. Meridian, please, be reasonable."
But Tempest never is, not when he stalks around like this, looks at you like this, as if you're already dead. Strat doesn't say a word,
but words don't matter now. The commander is going through the motions, weighing options. If you know him, you know he doesn't care whether Rishard says yes or no, helps them or not. He's going to tear some enemy limb from limb, and soon, with his sacred band behind him. Battle is in his eyes, and in his heart, and all of them are in his hands. Last call. Last throw of the dice. Strat shivers, though the room is warm, with the four of them packed in close.
"Please, is it?" the Riddler asks Ishard. "If saying please will do it, I'd be willing."
The commander paced off the room, fixing the necromant with his most baleful stare.
"If you're not strong enough or skilled enough, simply tell me. We'll look elsewhere for aid. But there will be many casualties, one way or the other. Many nearly dead and dying who can't be saved. If you're not around to help save the living, then you won't be with us to help dispatch the soon-to-be-dead. A feast will be laid on for someone of your tastes."
Offer on the table. Bargain of the most hideous kind. Or perhaps not so hideous. Dying men suffer. So do the men who have to kill them out of mercy when lives can't be saved on the battlefield.
Sometimes the commander sent chills up Stratton's spine, fielding tactics and strategies that no lesser man would ever dare. Tempus had commanded how many armies, was hardened in battle over how many centuries?
Ishard replied in her silkiest voice, "Riddler, I didn't know you cared so much for my well-being. I'm flattered and intrigued. Many dying and soon to be dead for me. As a part of your expeditionary force? Do tell me more."
Maybe there was something worth having for Ishard in this oncoming battle after all. Something she would prize. Where is the honor, the glory, in what Tempus is proposing? What the Riddler was offering the witch still seemed too horrible. But the commander was right. Ishard could save many dying men untold agony in pitched battle, if pitched battle there was to be. Stratton was only a soldier. He did what he was ordered. Crit would understand what was right, what was fitting, how to do what they were asked. Meridian? Where was that, exactly? How would they fight Ascalon and the wizard boy on such uncertain ground? Yet some battle was in the offing. The commander was readying a strike in the wake of the barracks fire and the burning of the mage guild. But there was something else here, urgency such as he'd seldom seen in Tempus. Would Ishard help them locate the Dream Lord and the Wizard Boy? She hadn't succeeded yet. Then, the Riddler said with a cold and appraising look,
"I need to show you something, Ishard. Stratton, get her a horse. We're going to take a little ride."
Nico's primary mission is to protect Tempus, his commander. Chironea happening again? A second Chironean campaign with the sacred band of thieves and his commander's stepsons against tens of thousands of enemies on that god's forsaken battle plain? Again? The Riddler? Speared in the heart? again? Could the same mistakes happen twice? Could the same awful destiny repeat itself here and now? A world away? A plane away? Divorced in place and time from the battle plane that dogged Nico in his rest place and deviled him in his sleep. This was the doom that had been haunting his dreams. It took everything he had, every skill of Matt, all his transcendent perception and what was left of his equilibrium to appear calm and reasoned. He wanted to be alone on that overlook, send his senses out to assess this enemy soul by soul. But he couldn't. Not now. Too much was in motion, and the commander was too busy for Nico to get him alone. Nico rode out with Tempest, Ishard, and Stratton to where they'd left Critias. During the whole ride out there, Nico's stomach rolled as if he were on a boat at sea. Chironea kept dancing before his inner sight, Sham's battle space bringing up the rear. He'd not taken those visions seriously enough, not by half. He wanted to pull the night around him, go off by himself and think things through. But there was no time. Not with a battle looming and an enemy encamped so close. When they got back out to the overlook, he didn't see Critias. But he saw the troops camped in the valley below, taunting them to come out and fight. Battle was what the band wanted, what they needed, what they all did, what they all knew. Sham would be there somewhere, waiting for Nico, finally ready for death or victory. All the powers agreed that only Nico could kill Sham. Fine. Tomorrow was as good as any other day. Better. And Ascalon would be there. Time to make an end to this lord of dream and shadow. Pastime. Here or Chironea or Meridian or all three merged together. Battle was battle, men were men. No commander fields a force like the one in that valley and hides himself away. Shamshi and Ascalon would come out and fight. The big black horse was more talented than any horse he'd ever had. It would be a shame to die before he got to know this stallion. But death would take him here, there, now, or on some other day. Matt made you ready to live or die. He healed now, faster than before, a gift from Harmony. The Theban goddess had brought him back from the dead once and back from deadly wounds once. Was it for this she'd saved him? Was she looking for vengeance for her Thebans, all 254 massacred on the Chironean battle plain? She'd have it, with Chironea stretching out before them, where it shouldn't be. Why things were as they were couldn't matter to Nico now. Here he was, and here he'd fight, for his commander, for himself and his Mat. To make an end to the strangeness in the proportion encamped in the next valley and a hill away, with torches aflicker, taunting them to come out to play. There was still enough night to cover their party. They rode their horses up to the edge of the overlook where Abarsis had gone to heaven. And it was peaceful there. Stratton was getting off the bay to help Ishard down from the big dun. But Tempest was quicker. They stood there in silence until Ishard said,
"I see you didn't overstate the situation. And I think I can help you with some, though not all. You want to take your force to Meridian, you say?
Don't bother. For all intents and purposes, Meridian is here.
She gestured to the valley below.
Didn't anyone ever tell you, Riddler, to be careful what you wish for?
Then the necromant put her arm through the commander's, and the two walked away, along the edge of the outcrop, talking very low. Strat came up to Nico.
You heard about the Mage Guild being burned. Do you think that's what set this off?
Ace waved his hand toward the valley below.
How could they get here this fast? What's the plan?
Meet the enemy and defeat the enemy. The plan is always simple, always the same. He'll tell us how he wants it. By might, by guile, by force of will, by force of arms, or by dint of all, in proportion to the force arrayed against us. What's the difference? They've come to us for battle. We'll bring it to them.
What if they're already dead?
Stratton didn't know that Nico had died and been resurrected at the Mage Guild. No one knew but Tempest and the goddess. So what if they are? Or some are. This is sanctuary. Death here is a relative term. Your time with Ishard has surely taught you that.
If I hit it, or spear it, or stab it, or strangle it, or decapitate it, or put an arrow in it, and it goes down and stays down, that's good enough for me, said Stratton gruffly.
And me, said Nico. But it wasn't. End of chapter 42. Chapter 43, Battle of Your Dreams.
So, Enlil, Lord of War and Bloodbath, do you like fighting this fight a second time?
Tempest asked the god in his head and got no more reply than he had the last time he fought on the Kyrenian battle plain. The god breathes with deep and greedy breath in him, so much a part of him, reaching into every sinew, every muscle. Enlil is in his heart, in his mind, and in his body, remaking him one more time, and reaching through him to his horse. His horse is stronger, faster now than a horse can be. But this horse has fought before when the god rides and understands its mission. Purple haze lies all around Tempest and his sacred band, with their reinforcements, 290 Third Commando fighters now under Sink's control. They're fighting for their lives among the Dreamlord's forces, who attack even one another. Thebans and Macedonians, ghosts and men, are on this battle plain today, again. And there are no gods or goddesses on the overlook, no lightning bolts or shower of arrows from on high. Just Enlil in his head and so many fighters shoulder to shoulder, eye to eye. Reality and illusion mixing together, lethal together. Abarsus had warned Tempest, trust not in what you see. Iron grating, swords clanging, the wounded yell and curse, the dying sob and cry. Horses whinny, hooves drumming, orders bellowed from too many throats, too much noise, too much passion. Confusion swallows order on this battle plain today. The purple haze scuds in billows across the valley floor, obscuring fighters' sight, making it hard to tell friend from foe in this ferocity everywhere. Nico says this battle plain looks like Shamshi's rest place,
when he fought there. Just before they'd brought the ranks onto the valley floor and into this demented war, he'd let Nico address his forces. Stepsons and Thebans and Sink's third commando. Fresh from Lemuria. In case Tempest was felled and Nico survived, command must transfer smoothly. There must be no doubt of his successor. And Nico had told their fighters, gathered on the overlook, "Restore balance. Deliver justice. That's the mission. Show me you understand." Nico thrust his sword sky high and howled their wolf call. And 358 warriors did the same. "Look around you. It's an honor to fight beside you. Today we choose to fight, for the freedom to fight on other days. So we remember what's worth fighting for." They'd howled again. Stealth had waited, then called out, "Life to you, and everlasting glory!" And the sacred band all shouted back the same. Then Nico had stepped back and muttered, "You should be doing this, not me." "Not today," Tempest had told Nico and clapped him on the arm, proud of this boy he'd grown into a man, whom all of his would follow to their deaths if need be, understanding why they did. Then they'd ridden away from Abarsis's overlook in tight formation, and down into this valley with its purple haze and combat all around. Piercing enemy lines, Tempest in the lead, always keeping tight together, until the enemy's sheer numbers slow their penetration. Tactics and execution by the Riddler's book. Sharp wedge of cavalry. Take the high ground. Find the Dream Lord. Find the wizard boy. Sweat on the training field saves banned lives on the battlefield. Training makes all the difference on the day. Now it's hack and cut and push and shove and trample. Fight on through, teams tight together, pair bond making two men into so much more. The band fights well today, outnumbered against this disarrayed enemy, busy fighting one another. Amid so much confusion, their practiced battle takes a grievous toll. It feels so good to bring this battle so long coming. To split line after line arrayed against them, knifing their way through this dreaming host with his right man by his side, and all his beloved fighters charging in their wake. Tempest gallops his speeding troth through the fray, Nico on his right. His mount calls a challenge to every other horse it sees, and Nico on his goddess-given black keeps pace. The battle swirls all around again. Same battle, different day, and the god likes this battle just as well as he did the last time. Tempest can barely keep his right-side partner on the big black horse in mind while Enlil glares down from heaven, and out of Tempest's eyes and everywhere is shrieking and bleeding and dark death hurtling through the skies as the Dream Lord tries unearthly battle, new and deadly, against the mortal fighters of the God of War. Enlil is outraged by this sorcery, by unnatural lusts defiling honest combat, by dead and dreaming heroes denied their hard-won rest and glory. The god is snarling so that Tempest can hardly hear the wails and howls of men and ghosts and dreamers dying once again.